Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Listen to Talk with Marie Live. Get ready for some music, books, social events, and special guests. Here's your host, Marie.
Hello, everyone. Happy weekend. We have another special episode of Talk with Marie Live. I'm going to be chatting with Courtney Woods, who has a GoFundMe campaign to support a wonderful project that she's working on. And as always, I want to start the show by thanking all my followers on Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Hoping everyone is having a wonderful holiday weekend. And so you can call in live. I usually don't say this at the top of the show, but you can always call in, ask me questions and ask the guest questions. Today we have so much to talk about, from the GoFundMe campaign to books and movies that Courtney has watched recently or is excited about reading. We have a wonderful book we're going to be promoting called Lift Off by Donovan Livingston, a Harvard graduate. His book will be coming out next year. And at the end of the show, I'm going to have a treat for you guys where you get to hear part of his inspirational commencement speech that he gave a few months ago at Harvard. So without further ado, I'm going to be chatting with
Hi, Marie.
Hi,
how
Courtney.
Are you?
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate your time.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to welcome you back. I was just giving everyone a little update on what we're going to be talking about. It's great to have you back. It's been exactly a year since you've been on the program.
Wow. It doesn't feel like it's been that long.
So I'm sure lots has happened. So it's like your one-year anniversary in, technically, in Cambridge, in Boston as well, right?
Right. I have been here for a year. It feels like it was yesterday.
I know. It doesn't seem that long. I was looking at the time. I'm like, September is when we talked, and then, you know, you weren't even here yet. So what was the transition like from Michigan to Massachusetts?
You know, I actually thought the transition would be harder because I didn't know anyone in the Boston area or Massachusetts at all. I think that my transition was actually a lot better than I anticipated because I was working at Harvard College in the Phillipsburg South with the Center for Public Interest Careers, and the staff members there really took me in like family. Some of the people here at Harvard College and at the other respective graduate schools were really instrumental in helping me find housing and gain access to the resources I needed to kind of feel more comfortable here. And I really created a great community of colleagues among the graduate student population before I even started my graduate program this year, which was really great.
That's great, because I thought it was going to be almost like a little culture shock being from Michigan to a whole new place. So it's like, you know, everything would have been new. You know, the school is new. You're living with new people. You have new professors and adjusting. So I'm hoping you had a chance to explore, since the last time I saw you in Harvard Square, that you've gone beyond the square and had a chance to see more of the city than what the square has to offer.
Yes, a little bit. I mean, I enjoy Boston. I really enjoy the Dorchester neighborhood. I think that when you go into areas like Dorchester, Roxbury, and Mission Hill, I think that you see a different story of Boston. And it's interesting because I got a chance to observe the gentrification here. I thought that was really interesting and learned a little bit about the city's history. So that was great.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fun place. One of the things I would recommend some people to do, I don't know if you've ever taken public transportation here, but We have the number 66 that goes from Harvard Square to Roxbury. I don't know if you've ever been on it.
It's
a great view of, like, from that city to Roxbury, just to see along the way sort of like how, you know, block by block things are changing. And even two-way from Harvard Square to Dudley Square and then from Dudley to Cambridge. It's sort of very interesting. So it's a fun tour. But the big news today is that you have a Kickstarter that you're working on. This is going to become almost like a special You know, like a kick, you know, another GoFundMe campaign. The last one was successful, which is how you got here, sort of help you get here. Mm-hmm. So tell us about what this new campaign is, what we're going to be supporting with this new GoFundMe campaign.
Sure. So I am currently taking a Kaplan LSAT prep course. The LSAT is the Law School Admissions Test. So I'm preparing to apply for law school this February. I would start a program in the fall of 2017. I'm currently a master's candidate at Harvard Graduate School of Education. I'm studying education policy and management. So I will finish my master's degree in the spring of 2017 and then go directly into the fall at a law school, perhaps here at Harvard. But the campaign is to raise money for the prep course because it's very expensive. So far, we've reached our halfway mark, which is outstanding. I've only asked for people to donate $10, but what I've been finding is that a lot of people are donating $20 and $50 and much more than I would have expected. And I think that it really kickstarted our campaign a lot sooner than I anticipated.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, I think the minimum is 10. And, you know, sometimes I think those Kickstarter campaign, it's a great way to kind of learn about running for office or fundraising for anything that you're passionate about or supporting, because any amount helps you reach your goal. And so I think I'm happy that so many people went higher than the minimum that you were requesting. So we have a few supporters. You have a few that are at the $50 mark, which is really amazing. And you're getting tons of positive feedback from people. So what have you heard since the campaign started?
Well, I definitely, this campaign was significant in comparison to my campaign that I did last year, because I laid out why law school is important to me and important for my goals, right? So I discussed my pursuit to hold office in the U.S. Senate for the state of Michigan. I would be the first Black female to ever hold office in representing the state of Michigan, and only the second Black female ever in history to ever hold seat in the U.S. Senate. So this campaign was ideal because instead of just saying, you know, I want to go to law school and I need this help with paying for this class, I really focused on why this class is one step toward my ultimate life and my career in my pursuits beyond law school. And I think that that's where the positive feedback came from. So some people, like an MSU alum, in his comments when he donated, talked a lot about Thurgood Marshall. And some of my mentors from Lansing and from Cambridge really talked about believing in the overall mission in my pursuit for office, and that's why they donated. Not only because they, you know, think it's important for me to do well on this test, but because they understand that this test is a crucial step toward my entire career.
That's great. And, I mean, I know you mentioned on the page that you've done internship and you've worked with U.S. Senator Debbie. And so you've had tons of experience. And so are these experiences part of the motivation for running for office? Like, I know making a difference is really big for you. So what's the motivation behind wanting to run for public office?
Well, I interned with Senator Stabenow, as you mentioned, who is one of the longest standing women to last in the Senate in history. I also served with the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Judiciary. This committee is very particular because all of those who are representing the committee are lawyers. So all the staff members that I worked with were lawyers and practitioners in law. And so I think those experiences definitely crafted my interest, but they probably, instead of incentivizing it, just helped me develop a better perspective about what it takes to get there. So why do I want to run for office? I think that public servitude has always been a very important part of my life. I think that my particular interest in the legislative process particularly fall within education and criminal justice reform. And I think, like, we're doing a good job so far pushing on these issues. Well, arguably. Like, I think this administration, the Obama administration, has done a lot of progressive things towards you know, where I would want to be when I run, what, like 10 years from now. So we have, like, the Task Force on Community Policing in the 21st Century, right, and those reports that came from that. I think that we could push the envelope and eliminate mandatory minimums and private prisons and pay people who are incarcerated equitable wages for prison labor. I also think that it's very important to continue the funding for academic programs like TRIO. TRIO SSS is a program that I used to work in and be a participant of. I also think that the Obama administration has done a great job with its guidance letter that came out a couple years ago on disciplinary practices for students of color. So I think this last 10 years, 8 years, I've grown up with a president that I believe sides with me on many issues, in addition to, you know, interning both in the House and the Senate. And I think my personal experience, as well as my professional experiences, has really crafted not only why I want to run for office, but what I want to do once I'm there.
That's great. I mean, I think I've always, I'm hoping you won't wait 10 years, because I think that's one of the things I noticed women do. We plan, we do everything, we do the checklist in terms of feeling like we need to be like super, like going above being prepared, which is great considering what we're dealing with with this election season. So it's great to have sort of like all the experiences and everything to be ready. But I think being in there and getting that practice and working at the local level, even the state level, what you want to go back and run to versus waiting until you sort of amass all the experience and all the whatever. This is one, I think, one thing I wish we would take from male candidates. If you want to run and you feel ready, just jump in and run. We have a lot of great organizations supporting women and training women early so they can feel ready, not just sort of, you know, just policies, but really knowing what the issues are in the communities that they want to make an impact in. So I would say think sooner than later, which is a great transition to our current election. Any thoughts in terms of what you've heard or seen so far with the presidential election going on?
Definitely. And just to comment on what you mentioned as well, women are definitely needed in leadership, right? I think that, as you mentioned, there are a lot of programs that prepare women. There's actually a program at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government called Harvard Square to the Oval Office. And that is a program that prepares women who are interested in running for office as well. I think that girls are taught to be apologetic for who they are. I think that we're not allowed to express ourselves, and we're constantly ridiculed for being independent and outspoken. And that's why I am so inspired by Hillary Clinton's campaign. I think that Hillary will be my president, and I'll be honest, I stand to the left of Hillary on the political spectrum, but as a Black woman is, I think that she is the most qualified candidate to serve as our commander-in-chief, and I trust her to make the decisions that are best for this country. I know that recently a lot of people have been discussing Trump's recent comments, but I think that those comments, you know, those sexist comments demonstrate more than his personal misogyny, but instead reflect the culture of fragile masculinity and the culture of sexual assault in America. And I think that they're so widespread and so common that they sound so vulgar on his lips, but I think that when we hear our male colleagues say things like that, that may not elicit the same response that he's gotten.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, every week or every, you know, day, I'm like, okay, we reached the bottom. We reached it. We're not going to hear any more criticism. And it's like we're just getting lower at this point. It's like it's a bottomless spectrum of how low in terms of the views, whether it's publicly or privately, his views are. And again, you know, people are pointing out neither one is perfect. And some people even, threatening to boycott. And I'm just like, look, these are the choices that we have. Boycotting is not going to change anything. So to me, and then to be hearing these things, and you feel like, to me, the concept of being undecided, I'm just like, okay, I don't get it. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand where people are coming from, but when you hear these things, regardless of your political views, everyone, I'm sure you have families, you have friends, regardless of where you stand on the issues, would you want this person to be saying these things to anyone you care remotely about? and calling them certain names, grabbing here and there, and specifically women and any other group that's not part of the sort of, you know, privileged circle in his world.
Right.
It's kind of interesting that way.
It is. And, you know, everyone grows. Everyone develops. I think that I've had a lot of conversations with my colleagues here at Harvard and even, you know, even my friends from back home. And because I'm so passionate about criminal justice, I think that a lot of the rhetoric around the justice reform that was initiated in the 90s and the Clinton administration and their tough on crime policies has really come up a lot. And in response to that, I've often said they weren't the only decision makers. When I was with the House of Representatives Judiciary Committee, I asked those folks who, you know, had been on the Hill for 20 plus years, how did this happen? How did mass incarceration happen? How did the criminalization of black bodies manifest itself into the most complex prison industrial complex in the country, or in the world, excuse me? And what people have told me is that, you know, people were terrified of the crack epidemic, black and brown folks alike, right? So it wasn't just that, you know, criminality had a black face or a brown face, but also the people living within those communities the constituents in those communities didn't know how to respond. The representatives didn't know how to respond. The only response that seemed feasible was to create the hardest penalizations for those crimes. And then, you know, 15, 20 years later, here we are. But back to the women in leadership question and the discussion on that. This year I went to the Congressional Black Caucus annual legislative conference, and we talked a lot about the black women's vote in the Democratic Party. And what people often don't know is that black women are the most sustainable voters in the Democratic Party, and they oftentimes decide who the Democratic candidate is that wins. And so when I talk about being the U.S. Senator, the reason why it was so important to me to talk about my intersectional identity as a black woman and why that's important for me reaching the senator seat is because there's only been one U.S. black senator, Carol Moseley Braun, that was a woman. And I think that, you know, an intersectional identity like those who are black women like myself, who are also first-generation college students and come from low-income backgrounds, my intersectional identity has allowed me to experience and observe inequality on race, gender, and socioeconomic status from a very privileged vantage point, right? Because even though I have this background, somehow I've still made it to Harvard. And so when we engage in these conversations about women in leadership and politics, I think it's important to recognize people's growth.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree, because I think sometimes when people say, you know, the female vote or talk about women, they don't really sort of break it down in terms of which women that they're discussing.
Right.
And another big issue that I think both candidates have mentioned is really pay equity.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is lip service in terms of it's a hot issue now, but no one really going to state it's acceptable for women to be making less. They've been making less since the beginning of time. And even when people say yes, you know, I think Trump's daughter even mentioned it. And these are people who don't even know what it's like to be making minimum wage or living on like low amount of money, forget minimum or below the poverty line.
Right.
And they don't know what that means.
Right.
And I think
poverty.
At one point he didn't support the minimum wage, you know? So it's really interesting just to see, I mean, who has a voice. And sometimes you're hearing people say, oh, I'm going to be your voice. I'm like, this is the person you want to be your voice, who can even begin to relate on the most basic level on your struggles and your experience. So I guess we're going to keep watching. We only have a few weeks,
you know,
barely a few left.
Not
till
very
November.
Long. Right.
Yeah.
I will be sad to see President Obama go.
It's scary. I know. So we have to let that one go. So on a lighter note, I know when you're not in classes, you also have some time to read some books and movies. So
yes.
We have like
fun stuff.
We talk a little bit about what you've been, one book and one movie you want to plug in.
Definitely. So just to respond to what you said, because I think it's important also to remember that, you know, white women make 75 cents to the white man's dollar. A black woman makes 25 cents to the white man's dollar. I think that's important to just consider in our conversation. But in terms of books and literature and media that I've been interested in, I just got this magazine subscription. It's called Crown Magazine, CRWN, like Crown without the O. And it's really amazing because it has, it's so good. It has Black women's experiences who aren't necessarily celebrities or rich folk. You know, they're just normal, the kind of women that you see walking down the street, right? And it discusses economics and business and hair and self-expression and so on. And I've just gotten my second copy, and I definitely recommend the subscription. I think it's only like $20 too, so it's really cheap for the year. So Crown Magazine. Also, a book actually that I really want to promote is called Lift Off by Donovan Livingston. I know that you mentioned him in the beginning of the show. Donovan is actually a friend and a colleague of mine. I met him at Harvard Graduate School of Education. He actually is my boyfriend's fraternity brother, Phi Beta Sigma. And you can pre-order his book right now. It comes out in May. His Twitter handle is DLive87, DLIVE87. A lot of people watched his liftoff commencement speech. And I know the soon-to-be president, Hillary Clinton, made public comments on his video because it was so outstanding. I'm so proud of my friend. I'm so happy for him. And this book is outstanding, I'm sure. I've read some of his other poetry and seen him perform some poetry acts, and this is a book of poems, so I think it's going to be really outstanding. The last thing I'll say, Birth of a Nation. I went and seen it this week. It is amazing. It is truthful. It is devastating, but it is necessary. It definitely, for me, my take, it definitely demonstrated the plight of Black women and the pillage of Black women's bodies during enslavement. Mm. It definitely showed how, in response to a pursuit of justice or equality, historically there's always an increase in racial terror and genocide, and it forces us all to consider the continued systemic violence against Black bodies, question whether our public servants and our representatives have truly invested in answering the Negro question, or have they benefited on it based on more corruption and more violence. And so I definitely recommend, you have to watch Birth of a Nation. It's outstanding. I recommend it for anyone.
Anyone to watch? No, those movies are hard. And I think even in the end, even Bush, it's really tough. I mean, I don't even know sometimes. I don't even want to interact with anyone after watching
mm-hmm.
certain film. And it's just, God, it's a lot to sort of take in. But we have to, because I think that's what we're dealing with now, where people, I think, want to pretend certain things don't exist or didn't exist. And to some people, that's when America was great. And so in a way, when you hear, let's be great again, you have to wonder which part of history do
when
you want to go back. When was that greatness for people? Because, recently there's this new film called, I think it's called Timeless. And one of the characters is a Black male. And they were going back in time. And he's like, I can't imagine any time period I can go back to, that's going to be good for me. It's like, I don't want to go back because it's not good at any point. And even now, when you think, oh my God, we're so modern and advanced, there are some people from our past who may not even want to come into the present. Think about it, because it's still very, challenging on so many levels where we think we would have been so far ahead in terms of our culture and how people are treated as a whole. I mean, I think it's just humanity as a whole, because there are certain people sometimes we don't think about within the spectrum of humanity and how they're being treated, because there's always someone below. Even us, there's somebody else who's being treated less than.
Always.
Even Black women, after Latina, after Asian, after other and others. So I'm hoping these, both, I mean, it's great to have the book, which is so inspirational. I heard the speech. And I love the title, because there are days, in spite of all the struggles, we do need a reminder that we can be lifted off. And I think that's why Obama's campaign was so groundbreaking, because there was so much hope. Where right now, I think you're just reminded of everything that's wrong with our culture and our country. And it's just great to sort of, you have both ways, remember our history. And you have Donovan, who's also reminding us that we all greater than what people are saying about us and about other people, not part of that circle. So I'm glad we can even just touch on the surface of this issue.
Yes, just a touch of the surface.
Just the surface.
I'm so
and I think
to
he's
be
speaking
here.
In. I'm glad you came. And, you know, anytime somebody need to pick me up, I think that speech will really get you going. So I'm glad you were able to sort of come on. And let's tell people where they can actually get find your campaign and support and start making some donations today.
Yes, definitely. So my GoFundMe campaign, I have a shorter link that I'm going to give everyone. And it's GoFund.me2R0NTS. So GoFund.me/2R0NTES. You can also just Google search Courtney's LSAT prep course, Google Fund, or GoFundMe, and I'm sure that it'll pop up.
Yeah, I have, so I'm going to put in the link on my page, and then you also Twitter, so that's another way you can get the link for both your campaign and also Donovan's book, which is being plugged now. That's a lot of planning. I'm thinking, wow, he's been like in a whirlwind probably in 4 months with the amount
and
of things
he's
accomplished.
Since
that
He's doing so much.
Right. I saw that. I'm just like, oh my God. He must have like a twin or some, because that's
a
lot.
A wife. Her name is Lauren.
But
his
I'm excited.
Is,
so
his wife is the reason that he can do it all.
Oh my God! I know it's great to have a partner, a true partner, not like, you know, someone who's just there kind of thing. But it's amazing. So we'll find you on Twitter. We have the GoFundMe, and I think you're also on Facebook. So once we find you on one, we can definitely get all the other links. So thank you again for being on the program today. And hopefully we'll catch up again for part two before law school kicks in. And good luck with the prep.
Thank you.
And my hope is you stay here. I know you want to run in Michigan, but I hope you stay here for at least another year or two for, or at least law school will be here as well. Right? That's what you want?
Yeah. I mean, well, Harvard Law is always going to be a good choice. So
that's the one. Great. So good luck, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you.
All right. I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in today. I hope you enjoy learning more about Courtney's campaign. If you go on my page on Blog Talk Radio or on Twitter, you'll be able to find her campaign on there. So she's halfway through. The goal is 700. More is fine as well. So right now she's at the halfway mark. As I promised at the top of the show, I'm going to end the program with Donovan Livingston's commencement speech, which is on his LinkedIn page. And that's where I'm going to be playing a clip of his speech. So you guys have an awesome weekend, and we'll talk next time.
Education, then, beyond all other devices of human origin, is a great equalizer of the conditions of men. Horace Mann, 1848. At the time of his remarks, I couldn't read, I couldn't write. Any attempt to do so, punishable by death. For generations, we have known of knowledge's infinite power, yet somehow, we have never questioned the keeper of the keys, the guardians of information. Unfortunately, I've seen more dividing and conquering in this order of operations, a heinous miscalculation of reality. For some, the only difference between a classroom and a plantation is time. How many times must we be made to feel like quotas, like tokens and coin phrases, diversity, inclusion? There are days I feel like one, like only, a lonely blossom in a briar patch of broken promises, but hey, I've always been a thorn in the side of injustice, disruptive, talkative, a distraction with a passion that transcends the confines of my own consciousness beyond your curriculum, beyond your standards. I stand here, a manifestation of love and pain, with veins pumping revolution. I am the strange fruit that grew too ripe for the poplar tree. I am a dream act, dream deferred, incarnate, and a movement, an amalgam of memories America would care to forget. My past alone won't allow me to sit still, so my body, like my mind, cannot be contained. As educators, rather than raising your voices over the rustling of our chains, take them off, uncuff us, unencumbered by the lumbering weight of poverty and privilege, policy and ignorance. I was in the seventh grade when Ms. Parker told me, Donovan, we could put all of your excess energy to good use. And she introduced me to the sound of my own voice. She gave me a stage, a platform. She told me that our stories are the ladders that make it easier for us to touch the stars. So climb and grab them. Keep climbing, grab them. Fill your emotions in the Big Dipper and pour out your soul. Light up the world with your luminous allure. To educate requires Galileo-like patience. Today, when I look my students in the eyes, all I see are constellations. If you take the time to connect the dots, you can plot the true shape of their genius shining in their darkest hour. I look each of my students in the eyes and see the same light that aligned Orion's belt in the pyramids of Giza. I see the same twinkle that guided Harriet to freedom. I see them beneath their masks and their mischief exists an authentic frustration and enslavement to your standardized assessment. At the core, none of us were meant to be common. We were born to be comets, darting across space and time, leaving our mark as we crash into everything. A crater is a reminder that something amazing happened right here, an indelible impact that shook up the world. Are we not astronomers searching for the next shooting star? I teach in hopes of turning content into rocket ships, tribulations into telescopes, so a child can see their true potential from right where they stand. And injustice is telling them they are stars without acknowledging the night that surrounds them. Injustice is telling them education is the key while you continue to change the locks. Education is no equalizer. Rather, it is the sleep that precedes the American dream. So wake up, lift your voices until you patch every hole in a child's broken sky. Wake up every child so they know of their celestial potential. I've been the black hole in a classroom for far too long, absorbing everything without allowing my light to escape. But those days are done. I belong among the stars, and so do you. And so do they.